Hi, I'm Lois.
And I'm Stacy.
And you are listening to Whose Girl Are You? Today we have a very special episode for you. We have a guest. My friend and my coworker Karen is here with us today. Welcome, Karen. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I was looking forward to this and actually just talking with you and meeting you, Stacy.
So yeah, it's nice so to great meet to you. Meet you. I mean, another Youper, right?
Yes.
The minute I find out that you're from the UP, automatically I'm like, she must be cool.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
So tell me, I want to know, where are you from? Like, whose girl are you? You know, whose girl are you? Tell me a little of that story.
Okay. First of all, I am God's girl. So yeah. That's the top of it. But I was actually born in Chicago. But my family comes from the UP, mm-hmm. Iron Mountain, Michigan, which is right on the border of Wisconsin and Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I was born there and I was raised there in the First Covenant Church, which has its roots in the Swedish Mission Church.
Okay.
And my family, my ancestry is very involved in creating churches in the UP for that. There's a church in Iron Mountain. There's also one in a little town called Felch, Michigan, which is about 30 miles north of Iron Mountain. So, and the roots of that church is in Chicago. North Park College is affiliated with that church. So, mm-hmm. And seminary. They now have a seminary. So,
oh, cool.
But yeah, I was taught in my church about the church fathers, and it's very grounded in the word. That's why they started the church. They wanted something very grounded in the word. And so we do follow creeds, two or three of them, but we are mostly a Bible church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where did you live in the UP? Because I bet Stacy knows.
I lived in a little town called Quinnesec, which is about 5 miles from Iron Mountain. But it actually, between Iron Mountain and Quinnesec, has built up so much. It's kind of a subdivision of Iron Mountain now.
Okay.
Wow.
I was actually talking about where you lived as an adult in the UP.
Okay. Do you mean when I got to the Copper Country?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's what I'm saying. That's where she'll know.
Yeah. 1990, I came to the Copper Country. My husband is from there. And I lived there for 32 years. And we're still there. We don't live there in the winter, but we do live there in the summer. So
very smart of you.
Yeah. You get older and you're just kind of done with dealing with it. But anyway, it's a beautiful area. It's an awesome area to raise kids. We have three sons. And they're all grown men now. And we started attending the Loreum Apostolic Lutheran Church at Rod Johnson in 1990.
Mm-hmm. So your children went to Calumet?
No, they went to Lake Linden.
They went to Lake Linden. Okay, yeah, Lake Linden. Yeah. All right, I went to Hancock, so I probably didn't really know them. Yeah.
Okay. I always say Houghton because that's everyone knows where Houghton is. So
yes. I say Hancock as well. Like I didn't never technically live in Hancock, but that's basically where I grew up. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hancock Houghton. Yeah. Cause I don't really know Ironwood, Iron Mountain. Like I know I've heard of Quinnesec. Like I know of all the places, but they were more like we drove through them to get to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, growing up in Iron Mountain, which is a southern part of the Upper Peninsula, we thought Houghton was like not livable with all the snow. So it was just kind of, we knew about Michigan Tech. I had cousins that went there. And, but we just thought there was so much snow, there was hardly anyone who lived up there. That's the impression we had. So,
well, and, it's kind of true though, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
So funny.
It's a hardy bunch up there. So 32 years. So now you winter away, which is smart. That would be my ideal. I would love to be, you're living my dream. I would love to be in a northern climate in the summer and in a southern climate in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just is easier as you get older, especially. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
And when you have grandkids, so.
How many grandkids do you have?
I have three granddaughters. I had three sons. Now I have three granddaughters. So I'm having a blast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
That's great. So kind of jumping in a little bit, I was curious. So we're going to talk a little bit about grief today. And there's this grief model that I'm sure you've heard about, the five stages of grief that Elizabeth Ross wrote about back in 1969 in that book on death and dying. She was the one that kind of put this on the map, this five stages of grief. And some people say seven stages of grief and add these other two to it. But I'm going to list them off really quick. And then I want to know what your thoughts on this are. She lists it as denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And then if you go to the seven, she adds guilt and upward turn. And I want to know if this, what you think of that? Just what do you think about that list?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm not an expert on grief. I started studying grief and death because I just wanted to come to a better biblical understanding of it. And I know I don't know everything, but I also know that I've learned a lot. So what I think about that is, I think there are stages. I think that people go through them. I don't, as much as I know and I've talked to people, I don't see an order. You know, I think that they're, the order is good in order to read about it, understand the stages. But I think everyone's unique and everyone is, when looking at it as a Christian, everybody's going through it in different times, in different ways. And that's just what I believe.
Yeah.
I can tell you for myself, when I started to read books or study about grief, I started to look at it in two different ways. I looked at it from above, which is in God's word. And I looked at it below from our fallen nature. And when I started to look at that, there was one point that really was significant for me in my understanding about death and grief. And I don't, I believe we have to talk about death too a little bit in order to talk about grief. So one of the significant understandings for me was it was never supposed to happen. Death was not supposed to happen. We were never supposed to die or be separated from the people that we loved. And when I thought on that, I thought it was like a light bulb moment for me. It helped me to see where the pain of death comes from and why we carry it with us forever. And I believe that we don't ever get over loss within our fallen nature, but we learn to live with it. God will ease the pain. And we learn, there's a little bit more I want to talk about this that I've come to understand, but we learn to live with it. And there's reasons why we learn to live with it. So I don't know if you want me to go into that or if you just.
Yeah,
please.
Actually, I would like to know. People that have studied grief typically have had something happen in their life or a loss in their life of some sort that prompts them to go into this. Did you have something significant, a significant loss in your life that prompted you to look into grief from above and from our fallen nature?
Yes. I've had several. And so what I realized about my past was that I grew up grieving a lot and not knowing what to do with it. And I think this is why this just like was such a need for me to talk about it and to help people who are feeling the way I do. I had a biological mother who left my father, and I had another stepmother who left my father. And that was a tremendous loss for me. I went to counseling for that because I felt that abandonment. That's what the world calls abandonment. And realize that there is a pain inside you that you have when you don't have that nurturing. And you're trying to fill it all the time because it's something a mother should be rocking you and you know, holding you and hugging you and giving you that security that I didn't have. So how do I deal with this? Well, we all know that in the simple way is God fills that. But that journey to get there is, and to continue to be there, it's just work, you know.
Right.
But understanding that this wasn't supposed to happen made a world of difference to me.
Yeah. So explain that a little bit more. Where did you find that and how did you come to that?
Okay. Well, this happened when I was actually reading and studying for the Balm of Gilead and trying to understand what they call trauma. Death is a trauma.
Can you tell us, for people that might be listening that don't know what the Balm of Gilead is, can you give just a brief explanation of what that is?
Yeah, I think I'll allow Lois to do that since you're the coordinator, Lois.
Well, you're a former coordinator, so we both have this. So ALC Balm of Gilead is a ministry that was set up by the Central Board of the Apostolic Lutheran Church of America to help with healing for survivors of sexual abuse. And that's a subject that we should talk about someday. Maybe not today, because we're talking about grief today, but that's another subject that we need to address at some point is sexual abuse. Childhood sexual abuse is a thing. It's a real thing. And so Balm is there.
Balm of Gilead then is for that. Thanks for clarifying that for anyone that might not know what that is.
Yes.
So you went into studying stuff about that, which is another kind of grief and loss in and of itself, right, Karen?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you could remember where I cut you off there so rudely.
Okay.
Continue to share.
I wanted to go through like a little process because that's what I think will bring better understanding if I can do that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So things that I asked myself when I started to study this is, why are we not happy when someone dies since they have gone to heaven to be with Jesus? And why does it hurt so badly? Why do we grieve so mournfully? And why do people handle it differently? Okay, so we talked about death and how it wasn't supposed to happen. In the Bible, where it talks about that, death is mentioned for the first time in Genesis 2:17, where God tells us that we should not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And he states, therefore, the day that you eat it, you will surely die.
Yeah.
And so that verse there tells you that we are all dying from the time that we are born. But Paul will comfort us too in Thessalonians. He said, but we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. Mm-hmm. So that is comforting. And that was a comforting verse for me to understand that because of Christ's death and resurrection, we do not have to worry about death. You know, we will worry about it in our fallen nature. We will fear it in our fallen nature because it wasn't supposed to happen. And the other thing I wanted to bring out is there's other ways to experience death. It's not just in a physical loss. It's the end of a relationship. It's like we talked about sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, there's many ways that we deal with this on a daily basis. And so we also meet it where there's joy. There's an ending to like a wedding is a joyful event, but there's an ending of the relationship that the bride or the groom might have with their parents because they're united together. So their, you know, graduation is another happy event, but it's the ending of a where you were attending school and going into the future. Yeah. So we cannot go through life pain-free. And it seems like people are always trying to find ways to do that.
Oh, yeah. That's where addiction comes from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's many different ways they try to deal with it. And we're going to have pain in the fallen world. And so these are the kind of things that I just thought, so how do we as Christians deal with this? And how do we be examples of this? So I had to come to understand it in order to be able to help people. Mm-hmm. First of all, I guess I'd like to look at grief. And for me, how it works within your life and within your physical body. Mm-hmm. And before we get into that, I want to assure people that God accepts grief. It is not wrong to mourn or grieve. Mm-hmm. It is not wrong to be unhappy with this. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people say, well, you don't got enough faith. And that to me, that's how I feel. Ugh. So,
that's so destructive. Can I ask if you have any kind of working definition of the difference between grief and mourning? I've come to understand them to be a little bit different.
No, but I would love to hear it because I have not.
Okay. So I've also experienced a lot of me personally, like death, actual physical death of people close to me dying. So I've looked into grief quite a bit myself, only because, you know, you have to stare it right in the face or you have to run from it, right? And I decided to stare it in the face. Mm-hmm. But the definition between grief and mourning, grief is that feeling, the feelings that we have, the emotions that we have, the internal struggle and dialogue that we have with ourselves when we go through a painful situation. And mourning is actually the outward like display of that grief. So it could be crying, wailing, it could be withdrawal, mm-hmm. it could be
running to a substance,
it could be rage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be avoidance. Mm-hmm. It can be all of these things.
Yeah.
So there's healthy ways that you can mourn and express that outwardly. And then there's negative ways that you can mourn and express that outwardly. So it's kind of the outward manifestation of the inward feeling. So anyway.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting when you're talking about that, you're talking about stages mm-hmm. at the same time. You know, and like we previously talked about, you know, when is that stage supposed to happen? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no timetable on grief.
My experience is that it goes like a roller coaster that goes, it might even have a backward loop and highs and lows and kind of back in on itself because you'll feel one of those stages. I think the stages, I think it's just bad to call them stages. It's like, we ought to just call them, here are some things you probably will feel mm-hmm. at some point and maybe multiple times. And you don't know when and they accost you when you least expect it sometimes. And you can go in and out of these over time.
Yeah.
And hopefully they, as you lean into Christ, they get less intense over time. And mm-hmm. eventually the Lord heals those places in us. And then we'll always have a scar left there, but not a gaping wound, hopefully.
Have you seen the meme about the five stages of grief where it's like neat and orderly lists basically. And then the one that's a plate of spaghetti that's just like, you know, you're supposed to just go linear. No, it's not linear. It's it's a plate of spaghetti noodles.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big understanding that people need to have. These books are good and they're good for understanding, but we're not orderly people.
And I think if they say that, I would love that if it was just these stages, because I love to just work a program, right? I like to just tell me what to do next. And I'm going to work through it real quick because I want to be done with this part of my life. Yeah. I wish it was that way, but it isn't. But I think that when you read that, there are these stages and then you find yourself maybe feeling not as far along or that now you've regressed, they feel like it's a failure. And that's such a misconception that I feel like you're helping to unwind a little bit because it's not a failure and there isn't anything wrong with it. Like you said, like we were created to have these feelings because it wasn't the initial plan. So I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. It talks in Isaiah that Jesus was acquainted with grief.
Yeah.
You know, he understands all these feelings that we have. And I love the way you said that because it's so true. We need to allow ourselves to go through things in the way that we need to and at the length of time we need to. Yeah. You know, we as women need to comfort other women when it's 2 or 3 years on the road and they're still having a hard time because it's real. Mm-hmm. That grief is real.
Yeah, there's no timetable. There's some stuff that I just want to say, like, don't ever say to someone grieving, aren't you over that yet?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
No kidding.
Why don't you just move on? There's these things. And it's just like, do you think the person doesn't want to be past this? They want to be past this. They're not trying to stay here. It's just that this is their process. And the more you hear stuff like that, I almost feel like the longer this process will probably take.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And there will be things I remember, you know, I was close to my dad and he passed away. And every time I had a child or a grandchild, I wept.
Yes.
Yeah, I still do. It's like I wanted him to be a part. He was such a neat guy. I wanted him to be a part of that, you know. And it's just the way life is here because sin has entered the world. But I think it's so important to not really tell people they need to be in a certain place or a certain time. I think all this education is really good, but it needs to be weeded through, you know, for each person needs to decide what's right for them. And we as Christian women need to just walk alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
We can help them. We can say things when it's necessary. But the biggest thing that was comforting to me when my dad died was when I stood there and all these people just came through and hugged me and had compassion on me mm-hmm. as they came to visit, you mm-hmm. know, and no one told me, you know, people that say these things, I do want to say this. I just think they're awkward and they don't know what to say and they will say things mm-hmm. and it'll kind of put you back just a little bit, you know, like, yeah. oh, okay. And they don't mean it that way.
I always thought, forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they say.
Yeah.
they don't exactly. understand. Either they haven't been there, so they don't really understand it from the other side. And bless them. I'm glad they haven't. You know, someday they will.
Yes.
None of us are spared unless we leave this earth early. Or like you said, that some people are just awkward. They want to say something because you know, one of the hardest things to do with someone when they're in a painful situation is to hold space with them, to be quiet and hold space.
Yes. That, yes.
It is difficult. And I think it is something that we need to learn to do and be okay with that, not feeling like you need to fill that space with words. But honestly, don't you feel such compassion from someone that is willing to hold that space with you and look you in the eye and you start crying and they start crying and you just embrace? Like no words are said, but more words are said there than
yes.
any amount of words yeah. that could ever be spoken.
Yes.
And I don't know why I'm starting to cry right now because I've had that. Okay. I've had someone do that for me and that ministered mm-hmm. to my soul mm-hmm. more than some platitudes you'd read on a sympathy card.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
You know what this reminds me of? Remember Job?
Yeah.
When his friends yes. came and sat with him for a week.
Yes.
Silently. As soon yes. as they opened their mouths, they started mucking it up.
Right.
Don't we always?
Before that, yeah. Just don't open your mouth. Just go there and yeah. say, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no. I feel like when someone can hold space with you, it's kind of like that moment where you have Jesus with flesh on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you a little side story here. I worked at the Laurium Apostolic Lutheran Church as Rod's secretary for many years. And then I started to attend classes at the Interlutheran Theological Seminary. Mm-hmm. And there was this parishioner getting retirement age yeah. and his family came there. And for some reason, I felt really prompted by God to go there and visit these people every day. This person was now in the living room in a bed and he was dying. He had cancer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what I was doing there. I felt a little awkward, but mm-hmm. Rod said, no, go. He said, go. And so I went, and the majority of the time, I sat in the kitchen, which was separated from the living room. I would go in and sit in the living room and talk to him, and you know, because he was my friend too. And then I would go in the kitchen, and one by one, the family would come, and then they go in the kitchen, we talk a little bit, and then they would go back into the living room. And I always felt to myself, like, what am I doing here? You know?
Right.
Yeah, but trying to be obedient to what I believe God was asking of me. And so after he passed away, and it was a little while after, I would go and, of course, visit his wife and his family and that. And they were so appreciative that I was there. Mm-hmm. And I never said this, but I always felt like, I don't know what I did. I just sat there. And so that's mm-hmm. what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like mm-hmm. the words you use about being in someone else's space. Is that what you said? I can't remember.
Holding space. Yeah.
Holding space. Yeah. yeah that's really a nice way to put it and very simple.
Yeah.
I think that just being present mm-hmm. is a big thing. Yeah.
You know why it's hard? Because I think if you're holding space with somebody, you can feel those emotions. If you're really being present, like you're saying, you're being present, you're making yeah. eye contact, mm-hmm. you're available for whatever may come and you don't know what's going to come. So that's a vulnerable place to put yourself. But mm-hmm. then when their feelings do come to the surface, you tend to have some of those same feelings. But I think I could be wrong about this, but I think this is what the scripture means when it says that we share each other's burdens.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that verse.
Right? Doesn't yes. it feel like they're taking some of it on themselves when you're... Yeah. I don't know. It's a powerful, powerful thing. It's amazing that something so powerful would happen in silence, but it's vulnerable. Yes. Not everyone is willing to put themselves in that spot of being present. This is important, though.
We are a body of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, we are connected.
Mm-hmm. So. And it says when one member is hurting, the whole body is hurting, and we come alongside. And like you said, as people come to the funerals and hug you, I remember people coming to funerals of loved ones that I've never seen these people in my life. But the fact of the matter is the church was full. The hymns were being sung. The hugs were being doled out. You know, the body came and ministered to those that were hurting. And that's what the Church of Christ looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can't find that anywhere else.
Yeah.
No. I remember hearing stories from these people. They say, tell me a little story, you know, about their experience with my dad in one way or another. And it was like, I never knew that about him, you know? So that was cool. In his life and things he did that he didn't share with me, you know, because you don't share every single thing in your life. So,
no, exactly.
But very comforting.
Yeah. And for him, it may not have had that big of an impact. It was just like, oh, I just paid for that guy's coffee because he didn't have the money.
Yeah.
Where for the guy that you paid for his coffee,
yes,
it changed his whole perspective or his whole day or his month or his life.
Right. That act of kindness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what comforting is. It's being kind, allowing the person to go through what they need to.
Yeah.
It's not about you at all.
Yeah.
It's about them. So getting back to what we started a long time ago is studying about the brain. And this is what gave me a better understanding. And I'm not going to use these big words that people use because I don't know them, but I simplified it from my understanding. And there may be things I don't know in the scientific world too. So I'm not going to say this is it, but this was just helpful to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And studying about trauma, I learned that when you have a traumatic event like a death or a loss, your brain chemistry changes. And along with your brain that changes, your emotions change because of the shock of it. All those things we just talked about. And this takes time. The emotions have to try to catch up with the new reality.
Mm-hmm.
You might feel very uncomfortable with what's going on. And that's where grief comes in. And you start to go through all those different feelings. And the word that I think of sometimes is like things feel surreal. It's like you're going through the motions, but it doesn't feel like you're living in the world you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
You feel kind of like you're in a dream, I guess. But because God has given us that gift of faith, Jesus is always our reality going through this. And we can always hang on to his promises and cling to him. When you go through grief, it's like redefining yourself as your world is now after you experience that loss. What is your, I guess, new reality that you're living with? And like we've said many times, there's no timetable on this. The amount of time is different for every person. And another interesting thing I read that I wanted to bring out is about denial. And as soon as we hear the word denial, we're like, this is a bad thing when someone's in denial. Mm-hmm. And this certain book said, I don't think denial is necessarily a bad thing. Some people will go through that process. They'll be in denial. And some people will be in denial for a certain amount of what's going on. But sometimes we need that denial. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to give ourselves time to process what we're going through. This book said it's like a buffer zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives us...
is it a little bit of a self-preservation coping mechanism then?
Yeah. Yes.
You know how I felt? You know what I felt like? I lost a baby just before birth. Mm-hmm. And I felt like God came up behind me. And he put his hands over my eyes from behind. So my eyes are covered. I can't see this reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would like open his fingers just a tiny bit so I could get a low peek. And then he would close it again. And then he would open it again a tiny bit and let me peek and then close it again. Like just giving me enough of a glimpse of what is this new reality without your baby here?
Yes.
This baby that you planned for and expected is not here.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to look at the reality of the world? So I didn't feel like I was in complete, like, I didn't feel like I chose to be in denial.
Right.
I felt like God gave me that as a protection.
I think our psyche can only handle so much
trauma.
At one time, yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and so I felt like, you know, he just opened his fingers and let me peek through until finally he was able to take his hands away and I could look that straight in the face.
Yeah. Little by little, you were accepting the loss.
Yeah.
Little by little, the amount that you could.
Yeah.
And the feelings that, that's the other thing, the feelings that come along with that.
Oh, man. Yeah.
If they would have came rushing at you all at once, I can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
So this book was interesting about this, as far as it says, it's okay to be in denial a little bit. Give yourself time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between denial of something and a definite cutoff of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you didn't know it happened or that you didn't wasn't realizing it happened. It just was a lot to handle within this fallen nature. And isn't God so good with his grace?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so amazing.
To let you experience that loss in that way.
Mm-hmm.
He loves us so much. Mm-hmm. He does. And that's another important thing to remember when we're helping others go through this with the timetable and the ways we think things should be going if they're not going, and that it's not for us to decide, because guess what? God has this.
Yeah.
He has this.
Yeah. Another thing that I like, I don't know why it changed my mind so much about it, is the difference between telling someone to move on and encouraging someone to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything. It's a total difference, because we do need to move forward. We need to continue to feed ourselves and bathe ourselves and function in life, because we're still called to be here. But moving on makes it sound like you need to forget and maybe just stay in denial and just put it to the side and not deal with it. And that's not what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a term they use for that. It's called complicated grief. It's when the loss is way too much for you. And, you know, that's when we sit there alongside them, like you said. And sometimes you just do the wash. Sometimes you do the dishes, you know, the little things that are too complicated so that they can take a bath, or you can encourage them, say, if I do this for you, that way all you have to do is go ahead, take your shower, take your time, and then come back out when you're ready.
Yes.
And we as women, we think about that. Who's going to, you know, I got to get the wash done. I got to do this. I got to do that. And sometimes coming over and doing those simple things, or taking the kids out to give them time, those little things are a lot for that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when we do it, it takes it off their plate.
Yeah.
Which I think helps them move on.
I do. I do. I think it helps them to move forward. And I think also, by just being specific, I love how you were like, if I do the dishes, you know, will that allow you to go take, you know, all you have to do is take a shower. Don't worry about it. Take your time, all of that. And I know this is all well-meaning, but saying, you know, and I say this to people as well still, even though I know better, you know, if there's anything, you find out some tragedy has happened, hey, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. Well, they don't even know what they need, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, don't even.
Very good point.
Don't be so vague about it, right? So instead, like, offer something. Still, don't, like, barge in and take control. But you can say, I'm available today. Would you mind if I came over and just helped you tidy up the house, do the dishes? I'm going to bring some lunch. And they might say, no, thank you. I want to be alone, and respect that. But if they say, yeah, you've given them something specific.
Yeah.
Right? That they can say yes or no to.
Yeah.
I'm going to the market. I would like to pick you up some groceries. Is there anything I can get you?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Be a little bit more specific if you really do want to help.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that's a real good point, and I'm glad you brought that out. I don't know who is telling, maybe you talked about this, Lois, at one time, but you talked about how you would bring a basket of, like, toilet paper.
Yeah.
And paper toweling and all these paper products, maybe paper plates, maybe whatever.
Yeah, in my other podcast.
Okay, yeah.
In Dicey Stuff, I interviewed Norma.
Okay.
And when her mom died, someone brought a basket, because they have a very large family. And she's like, what do you do when 200 people show up?
Yeah.
Probably literally. There could very easily have been literally 200 people in the house. Not necessarily all in, but in and around.
Yeah, no one. Nobody thinks about the amount of toilet paper you're going to go through.
Right. And she said, somebody walked in with a basket. of paper towel, toilet paper, paper plates, paper cups.
Kleenex.
Yeah. All the paper products.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. She said, you know what I do now when there's a death in the Finn community? I walk in with a basket of paper products and say, I'm so sorry. You're going to need
maybe this. That should be a new tradition.
I know, right? Right?
Yeah. Because I think it's a very thoughtful thing. Whoever thought of that was like, yeah.
It so is.
Because it's really thoughtful to bring bakery, but oh.
But there's so much bakery.
There is a reason why I always gain weight when I suffer a loss.
Yeah.
Because everyone's bringing me bakery and it's so delicious. And I don't even care. I'm just like, whatever. I just eat whatever. And
yeah,
I don't even notice what I'm doing. Because that's one of my coping strategies for death is to eat a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
It's not a good one. It's not a smart one at all. I don't recommend. Yeah. But it's just the reality of what I do.
It tastes good. It's something good. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is with this table full of bakery is you end up throwing half of it away. I don't know.
And the other half right down my throat.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, something practical, like I'm going to pick you up some groceries or I'm going to bring you some paper products that aren't going to spoil in 2 days. Or I'm going to come and tidy your house, or I'm going to come. I would love to vacuum and dust a little bit just because I know you're going to have company and you're processing with your family. I'd love to help in this practical way.
Yeah. And you don't even feel like doing that.
No, you don't feel like it. You don't care. Yeah. You don't even notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was you, Stacey, that mentioned anger.
Yeah.
And I guess I just want to touch a little bit on that because I think that's a real misunderstood emotion. Anger is not a bad thing. It's what you do with it that's bad. We all know that. So allowing them to voice anger, you know, they might be mad at God. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they don't believe. It doesn't mean they don't honor him. They're just upset. They're in this fallen nature. And I like to think God just kind of winks at that because he knows.
Yeah.
Allow that anger.
Yeah, he knows and he can handle it. I just talked to someone and they said, you can even be mad at God. And I learned, you know what? He can take it. And he knows. Yeah. He's our father. He's our loving father. What other loving father, if their kid gets angry about something, isn't going to understand that? I understand that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to be angry and say things that later they'll go, oh, I wish I wouldn't have said that, you know, but who cares? Because you know that person and you know they're just in that state of mind at that time. Allow them to have that anger, you know, and I agree with you when leading support groups for sexual abuse. I remember the first time I said, if that happened to me, I'd be really angry at God. And it was like, they just looked at me in surprise, you know.
Yeah.
Because you know they're feeling it. You know it's there.
Yeah.
So allow them to have that. And then it's a good teaching opportunity for me in that group to teach them about anger. Just, you know, I've told them, it's okay to be angry. He can deal with this. He can handle it. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to turn away from you because you're angry. Jesus got angry. It talks about that with the temple and what they were doing. And so...
Yeah.
It's just like, but you need to talk about it. You need to release it.
And I think that's really smart that like to bring that up, that sometimes when you put words, when you were able to say, you know what, I would be really mad at God if that happened to me. It's giving permission to people to have the feelings that they're actually having to, because they want to suppress them because they think I shouldn't feel this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anytime we think to ourselves, we shouldn't feel this way. 100% of the time, that's wrong. That's because however you feel is how you feel.
Right.
My girlfriend says, don't should on yourself.
Yes. I think we have the same friend.
Yeah. Am I allowed to say that on this podcast? Yeah.
And do not should on anyone else either.
Yeah. It's just allowing them to have their feelings. Instead of stifling them inside because it could come out sideways at people.
Oh, it will.
Mm-hmm. And then they're dealing with that guilt too. Who needs that? You know?
Yeah.
So just allowing them, knowing their heart, you know, that they just need to say this and get done with it and be over it.
I'll tell you a story about my anger. My mom passed away just a little over a year ago. And I was out at my dad's house, and it's just me and my sister, but she has a disability. She can't travel and things like that. So for all intents and purposes, I was the only child there to write the obituary, schedule the stuff, do all the hard scheduling of things. And as I was writing the obituary, my dad was sitting kind of next to me. We were in his living room, and I was like, I'm so mad at you right now. And he's like, what are you mad at me about? And I was just, you should have had more kids, as if this is a problem he can fix.
Yeah.
And he kind of just was like, well, I'm sorry I didn't have more children. I was like, well, yeah, you should be, you know? And then after I got my anger out, because I wasn't nice about it, I wasn't laughing. It wasn't a jovial moment like it is right now, looking back on it. But then, you know, I finished writing the obituary, and then I was able to look back at it and be like, I'm sorry, I'm not mad at you about it, honestly. It's just, it's my response to the fact that I feel like so much has fallen on my shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, you know, God isn't going to give me more than I can handle. And I had already been working at a church and trained on how to put a funeral together. Like, if anyone was equipped to throw a funeral together quickly, it was me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had a funeral doc on my computer that was sitting on my lap, for Pete's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that was, my anger was coming out in that. And it was just a matter of feeling overwhelmed and like a lot of pressure on myself. And so I was just, it came out sideways on my dad, my poor dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you were able to talk to him about it, which is great.
Yeah. But normalizing those feelings, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
Have you been through grief share before or heard about it?
No, I've never heard that word.
So it's a 13-week class. We offer it at our church. And it's for anyone that has had loss of a loved one. So it's just for death. It's not for like transition and trauma necessarily. It's for actually physical death that has separated you from a loved one. So it's a 13-week class. And one of the classes I was at, I remember them saying, just because you feel like you would rather die doesn't mean you're suicidal. And those feelings are normal, to just be like, Lord, why don't you take me? You know, like, why can't I go home? Why did they go before me? You know, all of these normal feelings. Mm-hmm. But for someone to say, just because you want to die does not mean you're suicidal, and it's a normal feeling in deep grief, was such a relief, because I didn't want, it was one of those things where I didn't really want to verbalize that with someone, because it sounds like I didn't want them to commit me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid that I was having feelings that were maybe beyond what I should be feeling. And for someone to give me permission and say, this is normal. You just sometimes need to hear like, this is normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But then, and there's hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which you started off kind of saying, you know, from the very beginning, we feel these feelings because it never should have been this way. We were to live here eternally and not be separated from loved ones. But then sin came, sin and death. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a enemy that we have to fight, or Christ has fought, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, but it'll be our final battle on earth. Kind of. I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think that's accurate?
As much as I've learned, death is going to be, people, I don't want to say they fear death, but it's not something you look forward to.
No, I don't fear being dead. I fear the process of dying, like that it might be painful.
And this was part of why I started to read about it, because it's like the same thing about trauma, because this all kind of happened within the same period of my life. It's like, there's nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
What does the Bible say about trauma?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you look for people that don't want to make money off of trauma, that actually just want to talk biblically about trauma.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And I am a big fan of Diane Langberg, because she just talks about Jesus through the whole thing, that it's about him, but she stands up, and she's been doing trauma since before it was a thing. Her first experience as a counselor learning about trauma was talking to Holocaust survivors.
Wow.
And asking them, how did you get through this? And talking to different ones at different stages and different ways they dealt with it. That was her first education on trauma.
Wow.
So she's been there for over 40 years. I know that. And that's a person that I listened to probably every one of her speeches she did, or conferences. But When I hear these buzzwords going around, I have to explore it. I just do. Because I cling to the fact that there's nothing new under the sun and that God has this. He has given us instruction within his word. And so how do we help people understand it in today's world with everything they're being inundated with in society? And that's always my goal. And I think, well, if I'm asking all these questions, other people are probably asking the same ones.
Yeah.
So how can I study it to understand and bring it forth really simple, really simple? Because I might be educated, but I don't think highly educated. I think simple. So when this came up and I was saying trauma and grief and all these questions start popping in my head, I knew the answer was there. I know the answer's in the word. How do we take what God has given us and how do we share it with people so that when they come to a support group like you were talking about, with that real feeling that, you know, you're not suicidal, but you wish you were dead. I mean, that's so vulnerable. You know, good for you. Good for you that you could say that, because you don't know how many people you help by saying that. And so we need to have those places and we need to be able to talk about what the Bible says about those things in a simplistic way.
You say you're not highly educated and you keep things simple, but I have come to learn that I don't care how many like degrees you have, because sometimes the school of hard knocks will teach a person more than anything.
Yes.
And it sounds like you're well-versed in the scriptures, which that is a education unto itself. But yeah, both of you are educated in the scriptures.
And you.
And you.
Yeah. And
say
me.
Thank you. Yeah.
We're thank you.
Bible reading sisters, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't, and same thing. I don't know everything about everything by any stretch. No. I mean, I just learned in church on Sunday that there's more than one Tamar in the Bible. It kind of blew my mind. And so now I've been doing a deep dive on that, on all the Tamars, and they talk about trauma, right?
I know. I didn't know that. Boy. Now I have to go study it.
Yeah. There's actually three. I've only really gotten to the two so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But trauma, right? Tamar was raped by her half brother and then he threw her out. And then what did dad do? He just ignored it and said, just like, let it go. Like, I'm not even going to punish anybody. Right. Yeah. So she's devastated.
Yeah.
And then her brother, her full brother, ends up two years, don't quote me, 2 years later, I think, ends up killing the guy that raped her because he's so upset about it. So Absalom gets married because Amnon's one he killed. Absalom gets married and names his firstborn daughter Tamar. All right.
Wow.
So the line of David, that's kind of what we're studying in church. So that just mind blowing.
Yeah.
But I say all that to say, if you can explain something in a simple form, then you really know it.
Yeah.
If you can't take a concept and boil it down where you could tell the simplest of people and like they can grab onto that and apply it to their life, then you don't really know it.
Yeah.
So
I never thought of it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Bless you for being able to take a large concept and boil it down so that you can deliver it to anyone that you might come across that you see is in need of that and that they can grab onto it easily. I mean, that's a blessing to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a skill.
That's what I was going to say. Skill.
Thank you. God is good.
Yeah.
I know this is kind of cliche, but all the things that have happened to me in my lifetime, good and bad, but especially the difficult things I have gone through, if I can help anyone go through them with maybe not less pain, but maybe better understanding from where what they're thinking, that's just what I believe God calls me to do.
Yeah.
Just to be there and help people. Like we said in the beginning, let's carry one another's burdens.
Yeah.
And I know that the Bible tells us as older women, this is what we're supposed to do. And just because we're older doesn't mean we know everything, you know, but it does mean that we've experienced things like you said, and we surely know how to love others, you know, because that comes from God. So when people are going through these hard times of grief or death or change in their life, even, you know, this is another thing for me and divorce. You know, maybe if they're separated, we need to love them more so that they can be reunited.
Yeah.
You know, instead of not wanting to deal with it because it might be messy, you know? Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly why people don't want to deal with certain things, because it's messy and they know it's going to be, it could be time consuming and messy, and they don't want to get in the middle of it. And I don't want to be involved. And I mean, these are all things that honestly, like, have gone through my own head, right? I'm not trying to point fingers at anybody else, because sometimes I have the time for this. Do I have the energy for this? Yeah, definitely. We shouldn't be turning away the hurting and wounded from our churches ever.
Right. Thank you. That's a lot better way of putting it.
So, that's who Christ came for.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't come. He says it. He says, I didn't come for you, Pharisees.
Yeah.
I came for the broken and wounded.
And he prepares the people he wants to do this. And when I say that, I just mean he prepares them by giving them love so they can pass it on to others. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is complicated. Five-year-old children do it. This is an example. My seven-year-old granddaughter, I have a hard time sitting still. Maybe I'm ADD. I have no idea. But anyway, so I sit there and I can like listen to a sermon or a podcast, and I'm actually playing solitaire at the same time. And I think, oh, I got to stop doing this, but I can't sit still. And so me and her mother were talking about this too, because her mother is a doer also. And she was listening, and I didn't know that. And so she came up to me after, and she gave me this little tiny ball that has all kinds of little, looks like little strings attached. She goes, when you want to listen, they call me Mormor. Mormor is grandma in Swedish.
Yeah.
She goes, if you want to listen, Mormor, take this and just do this with your hands with it. And then you can listen at the same time.
I think there's a lot of us like that.
If that's not Jesus, oh my goodness.
Yeah, the compassion. She's like, let me help you. Let me help. I see a problem. Let me help you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yep. So, and maybe there's probably maybe at least 80% of women are like this, because we do multitask and all that stuff, you know, and I very envious sometimes of these women who just kind of go through life and they're taking care of all these children and family in a very neatly and calm manner. And it's like, gee, I wish I could do that.
You
know?
You shall not covet.
Yes, I know. I knew that was coming. But anyway, so
we have these sheets at the church. Well, we started off with like these little tiny clipboards for the littler kids. So it has like a coloring page and then maybe like a little puzzle or something. Mm-hmm. And we have crayons and stuff set up. They take them and then bring them back when they're done. And so it helps them to sit in church. So they're doing something, because, you know, even if they're doing that coloring and the puzzles, they're listening and it keeps their hands busy. Well, then we created these ones on regular size. Ones that are like outlines, but they said they're for kids, but a lot of us adults are using them now because we can like doodle on them and it keeps our brains, because like the way it's lined up and it's like, draw a picture here. And I'm like, this is good for me. So I take my notes from the sermon on these pages now.
Yeah.
I can listen if I'm doodling, but if I'm just sitting there staring, my mind goes all over the place and I can't pay attention. Yes. So
yeah,
that's how I am. Exactly.
Yeah, I get
someone's
that.
Gotten it.
I understand. Yes.
Yeah. We need adult coloring books.
Yes.
We have the same thing in our church. There's a like a bulletin for the kids. There's a 3 to 5 or 2 to 4 and 5 to 7 or something like there's two of them that are a little bit simpler and a little bit.
Well, ours are like 2 to 5 and then 6 to 100.
Yeah. I should look at the 5 to 7. I should look at the 2 to 4.
I can send you the file for my other one if you want it.
Yeah, no, I'm saying we have them in our church. I should just look at them, because just take one. I never take them. Oh, yeah,
take one. Maybe you'll pay attention better.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, do an experiment.
My granddaughter might be like, Grammy, that's not for you. That's okay. She'll understand.
I know the ones we had at one time were correlated with the scripture that was going on.
Yes. Yes.
So, and they take it in. They probably know more than we do that way. So.
No, I try my best. But then what do you do when your pastor is talking about Absalom and Amnon and the rape of Tamar and David being an absentee father? Like, I don't know. I don't have a coloring page for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
good for him. I can't believe he spoke on that. That's a toughie. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, and the sermon title was called, I don't even know what kids movie it is, but there's a song in the kids movie that's called We Don't Talk About Bruno. We don't talk about Bruno. No. Okay.
I don't know that.
So anyway, that was the title of the sermon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a tough sermon. So good for him. I'm glad he brought it out. Yeah. Because it's real. People need to know that.
That's what happens when you're doing preaching through a book. You're just, that's the next chapter. What are you going to do? You can't avoid it. So he's preaching through 1 and 2 Samuel, and there it is. So.
Yeah. And that's why I told that story about my granddaughters. I think women of all ages need to comfort each other. I think we're blessed that we can be able to do that. It doesn't matter how old you are, like I said. And the point is, it doesn't matter what you know and don't know, because God just speaks through you.
That's
and
right.
Holding a hand, like you said, just sitting there with them, saying nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to learn more about grief, good for you. Go study it. But you know what? Just bring your heart. That's what you need. You just need to bring love from God to them. So I don't think anyone needs to be educated. I think it helps you as a person, but God will give you the words to speak.
Yes.
You know, it's God's Holy Spirit who works through you and speaks to you. I do have a story about that. I might have shared it with you already, Lois, but I was visiting with this family I told you about a little while ago. I had said something. And after I was leaving, of course, you know, Satan doesn't like to leave things alone. He goes, I can't believe you said that. And so I'm questioning it. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I need to talk to this person so that they understand. Well, she was going out of town for 2 days, so I wasn't able to see her. And then I never did talk to her about it. But her mother came up to me and said, you know, when you talked to my daughter and you told her this, it was like really uplifting to her. And I said, what did I say? And she told me, and that's exactly what I wanted to say, but I thought I messed it all up. But guess what? So just go and love these people and allow God to work through you. Even when you're doubting yourself, you know, just keep going.
Yes.
And be there for them.
Yeah.
Women of all ages, you know, it's like you said, your distance in age is like 10 years, but so what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get along really good. And you can understand each other. So, you know, that's what's important.
I think, too, different ages and stages of life that you're in give you access to different groups of people. And so,
yes,
when you maybe are hanging out with people with little kids, that gives you the availability to come up alongside and help in that way. And if you see someone that has had loss and you understand that they're having a hard time to come up alongside it, and like, now I have more now I'm working full time, so I don't have as much availability, but you know, depending on what you have and like who God's putting you around, and whether your kids are in baseball and you're sitting on a bleacher, or whether it's in your workplace, or whether it's whatever, you know, minister to whoever God gives you.
Yes, exactly. I want to read this scripture. This was something I thought of, and I have in my notes here. It's in 2 Timothy 1:5. And Paul's talking to Timothy about his faith here. And it reads, when I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. It tells us what was passed down. And what was passed down was unfeigned faith. And I had to look that up. And unfeigned means genuine.
Oh.
And sincere. Those are the words that in the dictionary it says. So that's what we need to do. Just love each other and help each other with sincere and genuine faith in God. And we can all do that. It doesn't matter what we know or don't know, because he lives within us.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sit there and think you have to know everything before you go and walk alongside somebody.
I love that you're taking away everyone's excuses right now. As they're sitting listening, they're like, I have no excuses. She said, I don't have to be educated. Mm-hmm. I don't have to know everything about everything. I just have to, if I have the Holy Spirit in me, then go love in a genuine way.
Yeah. Show up.
Just show up for people. Yeah.
And sometimes you show up feeling nervous and like weird, like, what am I doing here? But heed that, you know, heed that and just do it. Yeah. You'll find out. And usually the blessing of walking alongside somebody is on you. You become so blessed by helping somebody.
So true.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So Karen, what's your favorite scripture about resurrection? We've been talking about grief and death, but we also believe in the resurrection.
I don't know why, but this is what popped into my mind. And it's not something, a scripture you usually think about, when you think about the resurrection, but it really is all about the resurrection. And it's from John 14, 1 through 5. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I would go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, that where I am, you may also be. That is Jesus' promise to us.
Mm-hmm.
So when we walk through these different kind of troubles that we go through, death and changes in our life, we have that promise that he's coming again.
Mm-hmm.
He died upon that cross, he rose again, and then he's coming again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, and maybe I'm naive about this, but I don't know if there's anyone that doesn't fear dying in our earthly body. You know, maybe there are those that can deal with it better, but I think the fear comes from not where we're going, but from what we're going to lose, because we're going to miss them when we're, you know, we'll be in heaven. Can't even tell you what that's like, but know that nothing really matters there. But you're leaving them, and you love them, and it hurts you to leave them. Just like it hurts when we leave them, it hurts them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest pain people have with death.
Mm-hmm.
And I hang on to those promises. Hang on to God's promises. You know, walk alongside these people, and don't ever think that you can't, because you can. Just love them.
Right.
And remember, he tells us in Revelations, he's going to wipe away every tear someday. We will not have to live with that.
It's so important that you look to the future and what the promises are, because it's like we might be in the middle, messy part of the story where we don't know how things are going to turn out, but we know how the end. We know how it ends. If you know how the story ends, it's a little bit easier to ride these waves here, knowing, well, in the end, this is what's going to happen.
Yes.
So I can handle anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, you know, it tells us in Genesis, we ate from that tree. We started this, but God is so gracious. All those promises in the Bible, read them and hang on to them. Let him talk to you through his word. It's just so comforting. Within our fallen nature, there's all kinds of things that we can read about out there about on what people go through. And I think it's a really good point you brought up, support groups. Do that.
Mm-hmm.
And be honest. I like your honesty. I like your vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus walked the earth humbly.
Mm-hmm.
Be humble, be vulnerable, because he just lifts you up when you are. And that, and how that helped you when you found out other people were thinking the same things.
The Grief Share support group helped me immensely, because I didn't really know where to turn or how to deal with it when I suffered my first real death.
Yeah.
I mean, I had had death, but someone really, really close to me, and I didn't know how to live without them. And yeah, I tried to get other people to go with me, tried to get like a sister-in-law, hey, come to this class with me there. Nobody wanted to go. Everyone was like, why would I want to go sit in a class where everyone's crying and talking about, like, that sounds miserable.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want to go either, but you know what? I need, like, I'm not doing okay. Like, I'm just not doing okay. Maybe they can help me. It says that they can help. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go and see if I can get help. And it helped.
Mm-hmm.
And you were that example, see? So they weren't ready for whatever reason. They just weren't.
Yeah, that's just it too. I think we need to be mindful of, you can't force someone to go the same path. Like, I went this path and that helped me, so then everyone should go that path. Like, don't do that to people. You know,
no.
You put stuff in front of people and you say, hey, there's this class if you feel like you need help. And if you're not ready now, I understand. And there'll be another class in the fall if you are still thinking about it and still feeling like you need help. If there's anything else I can do, let me know. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. I work in a church, so I'm always like pushing all of these groups to the forefront to say, you know, do you know about this? Do you know about this? Mm-hmm. But there's just so many things that those groups are helpful with. We're doing our very first loss of a spouse class, which is its own individual thing, because every loss is different too, right? Every trauma is different. Every loss is different. So you can't compare one to another. Like, I suffered a greater loss than you, or they suffered a greater loss than them. Like, there is none of that. Comparison is the killer of all joy anyway, in any arena of life. So, you know, whatever the Lord's given you to deal with, that's yours to deal with. And whatever they have to deal with, that's theirs to deal with. So try not to push people into doing stuff a certain way, because we all grieve differently. And It all looks different. Some people cry a lot. Some people don't cry at all. Neither way is wrong. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And just by going to a group and listening to other people, and even if you don't say anything, you can go and not say nothing.
Oh, absolutely.
People will say stuff and you'll go, oh my goodness, I thought the same thing. You know, you say that to yourself and you're at that time, you know, God is like trying to heal you. He's working to heal you by just listening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The church we go to in Wisconsin here is the pastor. They're starting a group for people who have family members with Alzheimer's, you know. He felt the need to do that. He said, I don't know what it looks like yet, but we're going to figure it out. And I thought that was so awesome because he was just trying to, he had to read and learn about it. You know, he just didn't really know about it yet, but he knew that there were enough people in that congregation going through it. So
I love this guy for doing this because my mom passed away from an early onset form. She started with a form of dementia in her 50s.
Yeah.
And then passed away from it in her 60s. And it was devastating for my dad to walk through alone, and people don't understand the complications that come with it and the support that's needed during it. I didn't either, right? So it's a very, very hard thing to walk through. So to have somewhere where you can like share your heart and feel support and know you're not alone, that's the key thing with support groups, is you're not alone. You're not alone. Yes. Other people feel this way. Yeah. We're here to support one another. Like, there's something to be said about it. We're created to be in community.
Yes. We're created for fellowship.
Yeah.
We just are. Yeah. We came across this church during the pandemic. We just kind of came upon this pastor, and then come to find out it's a sister church to the church I grew up in.
Of course it is.
It's called Zion, which is kind of funny. But anyway.
Which is the name of the church I went to in Hancock.
Okay. Yeah. And I went to Zion too. I did go to Zion for a little while, but anyway. And so we started listening to this pastor through the pandemic, and really he's just so, I don't know. I just like him. I like his vulnerability. I love his vulnerability and humility and that. So, and he's very, very scriptural with his messages, which is nice. And, you know, that's the most important thing, but his act of just walking alongside you through all kinds of things. Just anyway, so we ended up there when we moved down here to be by a grandchildren. So
okay, so you're not in the Copper Country anymore.
No, we're in Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Sheboygan.
We're in Cheese Country.
Yum.
Yeah.
I stop in Cheese Country and usually get cheese to bring home with me when I drive through.
Yeah. My son went to school down here and met a woman and married her. And now they have three girls. So we're here while we can enjoy them, and they still think we're cool. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I know we got like 24 inches of snow this year. It was so hard. So,
yeah. Oh, that's rough.
Yes.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
I think that's all like I wanted to bring forward is the understanding that of what grief is.
Mm-hmm.
And just like how our brain deals with it, realizing your brain has gone through a lot of different things within that time period.
Oh, I didn't read the book that you were, well, I don't know. Do you know the name of the book that you had gotten some of that information about how the brain chemistry changes after a trauma or a loss? If you don't remember, that's fine. But
I do. There were a lot of different books I read, but the one book that I really like that helped me understand more than the grief process or death is called The Body Keeps the Score.
I knew you were going to say that. So I have.
Did you read it?
Yeah, I did. Yes. I knew
did
you were
like
say
it?
That. I could not finish it. It was so brutal. I couldn't make myself finish it.
What do you mean by brutal, I guess?
Some of the descriptions of some of the trauma, I couldn't read it. Like I couldn't finish it. It was just, I couldn't picture the, like I was having a hard time because maybe my brain is really good at imagining. And I was like imagining some of these traumas and I just was like, I can't go there. I read the majority of it. I probably read 3/4 of the book. And then that's enough for me. I get the point. Like I get the concept. It's super interesting.
Yeah. And most books are like that.
Yeah.
Other books are, yeah, repetitive a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was interesting, the studies that he had done on, like, the shell shock guys.
Yes.
It was really quite interesting. And I don't know if he wrote a conclusion in the book or not, but when the brain is affected from the trauma or loss and the brain chemistry changes, does it ever go back, or is it just like changed permanently? Do you remember?
No, I don't. But I would think from what I know that it wouldn't go back.
Yeah.
It's created a new, because what you're thinking about now in your new, what the world would call your new life you're living, your new reality you're living in. I don't know what other word we could replace that with.
I think saying a new reality is pretty accurate. Yeah.
Okay. I think about this, and I know that knowing the amount of stuff I do about chemical changes in the brain is very like 1/10 of what's out there, and probably 1/1,000,000th of what God knows. And so when I think about this and the ability that your brain will cope and change to be able to comfort you and bring you to a place of peace. Oh my goodness, God is so compassionate and so mm-hmm. beyond our capabilities of thinking of what he does in his grace.
And just the way he's created us to be able to do that and survive.
Yes. But the fact that you know that when you go through an experience like this, that chemically changes your brain, that he provides comfort. He brings you back to a point of comfort and peace. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
Of course he would. He's God.
Karen, I've like thoroughly enjoyed talking to you about this. And I love that you're bringing attention to grief and mourning and normalizing some of the stuff and helping people to understand it. And so encouraging to all of us, I think, to remember to just come up alongside. You don't have to know all of the things and you don't have to know all the answers, mm-hmm. but can you mm-hmm. have compassion and mercy? You know, can you just stand in that spot mm-hmm. and love that person in whatever way that might look like that you're mm-hmm. called to? I think that's the most important takeaway for me, honestly, for today that I needed to hear. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. It was great to meet you, Stacey.
It was so nice to meet you. I thoroughly enjoyed talking with you and listening to you. And I think we would be great friends if you didn't live in Wisconsin.
Yeah, me too. Ditto right back at you.
If you ever move to New Hampshire, look me up. Or if you come visit, look me up. All right.
I will.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. We really, really value that teaching. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Lois.
If anybody has feedback for us, comments, questions, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at whosegirlareyou@gmail.com. And that spelling is WHOSE, whosegirlareyou@gmail.com. Thank you so much. And we will see you next time.
Thank you, Karen. Be blessed.
No, thank you. God bless you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.